This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
While our heads are filled with daydreams of Hollywood stars and nightmares of financial collapse, China is taking another great leap forward. China is building to become the world's largest nuclear-powered economy. A Chinese nuclear expert says the burst of reactor construction there brings, quote, the most probable period for a nuclear accident in China forward to between 2020 and 2030, end quote. The risks to very heavily populated parts of China are huge to unimaginable. As we learn from Fukushima, an accident anywhere in the world can launch radiation around the Earth. What is going on with nuclear power in China? From Paris, our guest, Michael Schneider, makes it his business to know. He's the lead author of the World Nuclear Industry Status Reports. Schneider has advised European governments and members of the European Parliament on energy issues. Michael Schneider, a warm welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, the nuclear industry in China can be as gigantic and mysterious as many other things in that country. Is the current situation clear and readable to you?
Well, let's say we know the basic numbers. We know how many reactors are operating. We know how many are supposed to be under construction in various stages. Everything else is pretty much uncertain. I mean by that, for example, how effective is the Nuclear Safety Authority? What kind of quality control insurance can be given? You know, what is the build-up of skills in the country? You know, when people know maybe that China generates something like 1 million engineers per year, but, you know, a trained engineer is not a nuclear operator. So one of the biggest challenges in the country with this huge build-up of nuclear power in a very short time is really train people to levels that are, you know, sufficiently qualified.
Well, just briefly, how many nuclear plants are operating in China now, and how many are under construction?
Well, there's 31 reactors operating right now, as far as we know. And by operating, we are counting reactors that are on the grid. And there is another 24 or so that are under construction.
So my first impression is that China risks becoming an experimental lab for many untested nuclear reactor technologies. All the dreams of the nuclear scientists seem to be either planned or under construction in China. They're talking about hopes for pebble reactors and thorium plants and many other new kinds, aren't they?
Yeah, but these reactors are not really under construction. When we're talking about reactors in operation, we're talking about so-called Generation 2 reactors. And the ones that are under construction are indeed, some of them are so-called Generation 3 reactors, of which none, or 3-plus reactors, of which none are operating. Of course, there are 4 reactors under construction of the Toshiba Westinghouse Model AP1000, and there's 2 reactors of the European Pressurized Water Reactor, EPR, under construction. And then they started building their own Generation 3-plus reactor, Hualong 1. But it's interesting that, you know, by saying that I don't know much more about what their own reactor design is really supposed to look like. And even in a country like Pakistan, where China wants to build one of those newer designs, the courts have stated that it might be a bit early to export a design that is unproven.
And there has been a lot of hype about the increased safety of third-generation reactors over current designs. How many third-generation reactors are operating in the world, and what is their track record?
Actually, the ones that are operating are not really Generation 3 reactors. By Generation 3 or 3, that's why people use the term 3+. There are some reactor types that have been designed by the Japanese that are supposed to be Generation 3, but they're basically a little better Generation 2 reactors. There is no disruption in the technology, really, up to the EPRs and AP1000s that have some features that don't exist in currently operating reactors. It doesn't really change the basics of safety in the nuclear sector at all. So we're basically in a situation where there's none of the newer generation reactors operating around the world, and even that newer generation is not really making the big difference when it comes to safety.
In January 2016, your publication, The World Nuclear Industry Status Reports, issued an update titled Mind the China Effect. How does reactor building boom in China compare to the nuclear industry reality in the rest of the world?
Well, it was very interesting when I went to China in December. I realized that in China itself, there is no consciousness whatsoever for the fact that China is basically the only country building. If you go onto the website worldnuclearreport.org, and you see on the homepage this graphic, it becomes visual that the only country that is actually starting up reactors and building reactors is China. So 10 reactors that have started up in 2015, 8 started up in China. So 2 reactors in other countries is just basically nothing. We're talking about in the point, you know, 0-point-something percentage rate of the capacity that is built around the planet in new electricity generation power plants. So all around the globe, the reactor building is so low that it's not enough to actually keep up with reactor closures. China is really the only country that's massively building right now.
Well, as I said in the opening, a Chinese scientist named Hu Zhaoyu has called the rapid-fire expansion of nuclear power in his country insane. Now, he's not a beginner. He's a scientist who worked in China's nuclear weapons program. He's been a government supporter for decades. Now he's 88. He can speak out, I suppose. What about other critics of the nuclear leap forward in China? Are they under pressure to keep quiet, or are they even disappearing?
Well, I think you refer to the same person I met, who is a member of the Academy of Sciences, a nuclear physicist. So he's a very senior scientist, and I met him last time when I was in China and Macau. He's very outspoken, and he's very straightforward, and he's actually not the only one if you go backstage, but he's one of the very few scientists that come out in public. So public statements in that area of nuclear energy is still, you know, a big problem. It's not an open society in that area, to say the least.
Well, not that the United States is either, to be honest, or Canada, but that's another story. So all of China's current nuclear reactors are either on the Pacific coast or very near it. Who has been very concerned about plans to build more nuclear plants far inland? Why does that add extra risk and potential environmental damage?
Yeah, it can be quite surprising, and it was to me, actually, to what extent this is a controversy, even in the country. And it's an open. This is actually an open controversy. Inland reactors is an open controversy. And I've seen some quite discussions, very harsh, very direct discussions, at a symposium at the Yale University Beijing Center in December. There are a number of reasons why inland reactors pose specific problems. One is, for safety, obviously a crucial ingredient is water. And nuclear power plants are, by the way, the largest water consumers amongst the technologies that generate electricity. So you need huge, gigantic quantities of water to cool these reactors. And obviously, rivers, I mean, there are in other countries reactors along rivers, but it is felt that a disaster like Fukushima, if it had happened inland, would have had dramatically different consequences because, of course, a lot of the radioactivity that was emitted by the 3 meltdowns ended up in the ocean. So it got diluted. It's not to say that it went away, but it's very different from if it had come down in a way as an inland reactor like the Chernobyl reactors. Now, the Chernobyl reactors had relatively little local impact. I measure my words, relatively little local impact, because there was a very severe graphite fire that lasted for 10 days. So it created a chimney effect, which brought the radioactive particles to a height of about 4 kilometers and spread it all over Europe, which was obviously bad news for other countries and people living in farther distances, but better news for the immediate vicinities. So imagine very high concentration of nuclear power plants inland. So that is definitely one of the concerns, is the spread of radioactivity. But it's also that the water contamination itself. Chinese people are very concerned about Yangtze River and, you know, the dependency of millions and millions of people of the water from rivers for agriculture and just basic. This is the basis of life. So this idea that these water resources could be contaminated is a very major issue in China.
Stay tuned for the world-famous nuclear activist, Helen Caldicott. You are listening to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with my guest nuclear advisor, Michael Schneider. We're talking about the big risks and reactor safety in China. For newcomers to the Chinese nuclear scene, one mystery is the relationship between giant Chinese nuclear corporations and the government, whether federal or state governments. Is it really clear, Michael, who owns what? And who controls the reactors of China?
Well, it's very much a state-controlled business. There's no doubt about that. There's basically CGN and CNNC, China National Nuclear Corporation, and the China General Nuclear Group. Only one CGN is listed at the Hong Kong Stock Exchange, so it has some kind of a private capital, but it's very clearly both companies are under state control. There's no doubt about that, which actually incidentally raises issues about participation of these companies in foreign projects, because it basically means if you build a nuclear reactor, let's say in the UK, with Chinese national capital for sensitive electricity generating power plants, it, you know, gives the Chinese government some sort of, a control over sensitive parts of an economy of a country like the UK, which has been raised as issue in the UK.
Well, let's zero in on one reactor complex under construction. I'm thinking of the Taishan nuclear plant on the coast of southern China. How does that relate to reactor problems in Europe and Scandinavia?
Well, in Taishan, there are two units of the EPR, the European Pressurized Water Reactor, or shall I say the European Problem Reactor, under construction. The first one that started building was in Olkiluoto in Finland, which started building in 2005 with a target date of grid connection in 2009. The current projection for startup is 2018. So this project is at least 9 years late. It is also at least a factor of 3 to 4 beyond the projected budget. It's now standing at officially at $8.5 billion, but it hasn't been updated for a while. The second plant in Europe that is under construction is Flamanville 3 in France, basically building at home because it's built by the French government-controlled consortium Areva. And the client is the largest nuclear utility in the world, EDF, Electricité de France, both state-owned. And here we see a plant that is officially now at 10.5 billion euros, so a factor of 4 over budget and, you know, many years behind schedule as well. So one of the issues that have come up more recently, besides many, many others, is that there were defaults found. Fabrication defects found in parts of the reactor pressure vessel. Now, the reactor pressure vessel is like the most central part of a nuclear power plant. It's a gigantic tank that contains the nuclear core, the nuclear fuel. So it's essential for safety. And in the bottom of the bottom part, as well as in the lid, there were these defects found, which are beyond technical specifications. There is no doubt now. Testing has been done and inspections have been done. The same fabrication methodology has been used for the Taishan reactors. Now, while you can replace a reactor pressure vessel lid, like the head of it, the cover, you cannot really slice the bottom of it and take it off and replace by a new one. So it basically would mean scrap the whole plant, make a huge opening into the containment and replace the reactor pressure vessel. Might as well start rebuilding the entire plant because it's also already connected to primary piping. So the safety authorities in France have said that there is all kinds of calculations. You have to imagine that basically all the calculations for accident scenarios and transients have to be redone because the builder has to prove that even though the technical specifications are not met, the plant would still be safe. That's not easy to do, and it's a very large number of calculations that have to be redone. And some is destructive testing that has to be done. Some is non-destructive testing. So it's a huge workload that has to be done. First results won't be there before the end of the year.
In the United States, there's at least the facade of government oversight of safety via the Nuclear Regulatory Commission over private operators. Now we're talking about in China, where the government that's supposed to regulate is also pushing nuclear plant construction as fast as they can. Does that lead to a sort of satisfying feeling of safety regulation?
You know, as I said, we have very little insight into the nuclear safety culture, as we say, in China. Very little is known. To be honest, I don't even know how many people are employed by the safety authorities in China, and very little is known about the origin of their training, of the quality of their training, etc. But, you know, keep in mind that what's the difference to the situation in Russia? What's the difference to the situation in France? Government companies that are building and operating facilities and the same for the control. So it's government built, operated, and controlled. You know, if you go through the various countries that are still building nuclear reactors actively, we don't see actually many examples of countries where we can say we're actually in an open democracy, especially in this field.
After the Fukushima nuclear accident in Japan in 2011, China delayed...
Excuse me, it's not
yes.
over.
Oh.
You mean after the beginning of the accident.
That's so true. China delayed further construction of new reactors for reassessment. Now they've all got the green light to go ahead. Are you satisfied that a Fukushima-class reactor meltdown is less likely in China? And if so, why?
Well, it's very true that the Chinese reacted very strongly to the Chinese government reacted very strongly to the Fukushima event in March 2011. And for 4 years, the entire program was frozen, besides the reactors that were at a late stage of construction. So construction continued and reactors have been put into operation. That's one of the reasons why people didn't really see that there was a freeze in the program. In 2011, there was no new construction started, and in 2014, there was no construction started. So basically, over that entire period since 2011, as many reactors were started than in 1 year in 2010 in China. So it was a very, very major measure that has been taken. You ask me whether is that sufficient? Is that a guarantee of safety? I have no idea, and I would be very doubtful about that, because one of the issues about nuclear safety is you can only increase safety by a very large pluralistic expertise. That is an absolutely fundamental ingredient to safety. By the way, in whatever is the area, you cannot reach high levels of safety under information closure. That's impossible. So that's not really a situation which I think is satisfactory. But again, is China really such a big exception? I'm not so sure about that.
Well, as I said, we know a reactor accident anywhere in the world affects us all. Who is watching what is going on in China? And where can listeners who want to follow up pick up more on this important issue?
Well, that's a good question. There are, you know, few sources that provide specifically good information on nuclear power in China. Some of them are expensive trade journals, and I'm thinking of Nuclear Intelligence Weekly, for example, which is an excellent source, but it's very expensive. For listeners that want to get some good insight from time to time, China Dialogue has proven a very good source on environmental issues in general, and they cover nuclear power as well. So China Dialogue is interesting also because it's published in English and in Chinese. So it's a both-way kind of information channel.
Do you have a story or some insight about nuclear power in China that I've missed that you would like to add?
There are a lot of stories or a lot of issues. You know, one of the things is that, to me, it's been interesting to follow this over three decades. In 1985, I was in the room when the president of EDF, the state-controlled French nuclear utility, announced the signature of the first foreign nuclear power plant in China, the Guangdong or Daya Bay nuclear power plants, which was a British-French consortium. You know, one of the journalists in the room asked the question, are you not going to lose your shirt in that deal? Because it was pretty well known at the time that the French industry lost money in that deal. And the president would answer, well, maybe not our shirt, but our cufflinks. And the director general sitting right beside him said, yeah, cufflinks, but golden ones. So they lost a lot of money. Now, why did they do that? They did that because the Chinese had in their planning the equivalent of 20 reactors by 2020. So it was seen as a gigantic market for nuclear power plants. But in fact, the Chinese were never a market for larger numbers of nuclear power plants. They bought two Franco-British ones. They bought two Franco-French ones. They bought two Canadian ones, four American ones, two Franco-German ones, two Russian ones. So it's technology shopping. And that was the whole Chinese strategy, was to say, we're going to buy technology and develop our own. So I think it's kind of amazing that there are still people out there in the nuclear industry that think that they can sell any numbers of reactors in China. According to my conversations with Chinese officials or semi-officials, there's no chance that China would order more EPRs, for example, and I think the same would be true for AP1000s, the Japanese-American technology.
Well, that was great. I just find so few people who know anything about this industry that I really appreciate the years you put into it.
It is a long story. You keep discovering things every day. You know, it's just unbelievable. And to me, you know, one of the things which really bother me is that decision makers still know so little about it. So decisions are made about billions in investments without the people actually making the decisions having the slightest idea of what this is all about. And I think that is really worrying. If you see that today, you know, as we speak, I mean, when I say today, I mean literally today, the value at the stock market of the largest nuclear operator, EDF, has dropped to its lowest level in history. That is over 85% less than its highest level since it's rated on the stock market. And the same is true for Areva, which is calling itself a global leader of the industry. Now, just to give you an idea, that today the value, the stock value, dropped below 4 euros per share. 4 euros per share.
Wow. Sounds like the coal companies.
The highest level was 72.5. So we're talking something like a 94-95% drop over the past 8 years. This company is bankrupt in real terms, not bankrupt in, you know, imaginary terms. At the same time, this company, Areva, is the operator of the site, the nuclear site, that has the largest radioactive inventory on Earth, which is the La Hague reprocessing facility for spent nuclear fuel in Normandy in France. Now, you don't need to be an expert to imagine that having a bankrupt company running a high-risk facility cannot be very healthy.
They're going to want to cut corners and fire staff and maybe do things the easy way.
There you go. And it's been announced that on that site alone, just that high-risk site alone, the company wants to cut 500 jobs over the next 5 years. Now, the total workforce is something like 3,000. 500 is a huge percentage. Now, my question is, did these guys go fishing all day? Or what did they do so that you can just fire them? You know, I mean, this is what really, really makes me nervous, incredibly nervous. And I think China is very important because it's the only country building, and it's going very fast, and it's especially population density is so high in China. If you look at the Guangdong reactors, I mean, Jesus, it's 30 kilometers from Hong Kong. It was a pretty crazy idea to begin with. But, you know, is it better? Is it any better in other countries? Is the situation healthy? Is safety guaranteed? I don't know. If I look at the financial and economic state of health of nuclear companies around the planet, I'm very scared. And that's even without talking about things like drones or terrorist attacks or sabotage. You know, on all these issues, we have seen very pretty extraordinary events that didn't make big headlines yet, but, you know, that bear the potential for disasters to come.
Hi, I'm Alex Smith. We've been talking with nuclear and energy expert Michael Schneider. If you want to Google Michael, it's easy because his first name is spelled M-Y-C-L-E. Michael is world leader in reporting on the global nuclear industry, especially as the lead author of the World Nuclear Industry Status Reports. He has many other publications, and I'll put links to the works of Michael Schneider in my weekly show blog, published Wednesdays at ecoshock.info. Michael, thank you for sharing your time and your expertise with us on Radio EcoShock.
Thanks very much for inviting me, Alex.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.